Are we ready to open next month?
I think so.
You think so?
Well, it's complicated. Fire protection, first aid supplies, uniforms, safety training, mat services. Oh, and restroom supplies.
So uncomplicated. Call CentOS. They'll handle all of it.
Wow. One company can handle all that? That's not very complicated.
So, you'll be ready?
Oh, we'll be ready.
Oh, I'm ready!
Learn how CentOS can help you get ready for the workday. Visit CentOS.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back Nine Report. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres, and every week I'm alongside my co-host Fred Alvader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Oh, Carlos, I can't wait to talk about our topic in the practice range tonight. I think the absolute travesty that befell Emily Bash in the Massachusetts Division III High School Golf Tournament is something that needs to be remedied quickly and never happens again. Plus, I'm going to make a bold prediction on that subject that our listeners can – you can hold me to, Carlos. You can write it down and check with me in 10, 15 years and see if we're right or not. But before we get to all of that, our top stories this week include – Tiger is going to return to action at the Hero World Challenge. Justin Rhodes soars. You remember that guy with the red shirt played on Sunday? He won one a few times. Yeah. He was pretty good back in the day.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Justin Rhodes soared when DJ flopped in China. And Bernhard Langer did it again. Again. Plus... We have a – yeah, he did. Plus, we got a great interview with our fellow golfaholic, Bill Kubitz, who talks about folds of honor, dogleg belts, top golf, and his club fitting at the PGA Superstore. So, Carlos, let's go.
Let's get it going. Like you said, we're going to have Bill Cuevas here. I mean, it's a recorded interview, but a great interview as usual with the golf father, Bill Cuevas. But – as usual, we're going to start with the week in backspin where there was action. There was a WGC being played this week, and something totally unexpected happened. I mean, when you have the world number one player leading by six shots with 18 holes to play, you say, it's over. I mean, there's no one. Everybody's playing for a second. Did he win?
He did not win.
What?
The first – no. Can you say Greg Norman? The first WGC event of the 2018 season was held in Shanghai, China. And as you said, number one, Dustin Johnson had the WGC HSBC firmly in hand with a big 54-hole lead, but failed to make a birdie on Sunday and struggled all day with two bogeys on the front nine, three more on the back. Posted a 5-over 77, fell clear down to a tie for second place with Henrik Stenson and Brooks Koepka. On the other hand, Justin Rose started the day 8 shots behind Johnson, 8 shots back, but got hot on the back nine with 5 birdies in a 5-hole stretch from, seven-hole stretch from 11 to 17, which gave him a final round of 5 under par, good enough to win by 2 shots. After turning the front in even par with 3 bogeys and 3 birdies, he really got it going on the back, posting that 31. For Johnson, it was the worst collapse. It was one of the worst collapses in PGA history. It brings back, harkens back Greg Norman at the Masters when Nick Faldo won in 1986. And for Rose, his final round tied the third best finish to win in tour history. Still, world number one Johnson, 77, was his worst round since 2010 in that final round of the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach, where he posted that ugly 82. It marked just the 7th time in his career that he's failed to make a birdie or better in a round. Rose, at the age of 37, still has a little left in his tank. He missed an opportunity for the green jacket last year to Sergio, but he still has that gold medal thing going for him. Plus, a U.S. Open trophy in his closet. Early betting may want to favor Rose at Augusta National. Now, April, Carlos, you may want to think about getting a couple bucks down on Justin at Augusta. You know, he was runner-up last year, so who knows? Brooks Koepka began the day in second, and his 100-pound, 100-par round kept him there. Stenson carded two birdies on his front nine and was even on the back for a 270, moved him up one spot to tie for runner-up. Rafa Cabrera-Bello is starting strong this season, just like last year. He tied for fifth with Peter Uihlein and Kyle Stanley. Brian Harman, Bernd Wiesberger, and Matt Fitzpatrick rounded up the top ten, all tied for ninth. There's that name again, Carlos, Matt Fitzpatrick. He might just be like the Luke Donald of the next couple years on the PGA Tour. Solid all-round game and a real competitor. Last year, Tony Finau led the tour the 50 rounds in the 60s. This week he finished T11, and then he added one more of those 60 rounds in the 60s. He had a first round 67 that gave him four rounds already this year in the 60s. Carlos, that's all I've got on WGC. You got WGC at China. You got anything more to add to that?
No, definitely. I mean, it was very surprising to see DJ bogey, and it was immediately. He bogeyed the first and the second, then the 12, 14, and 15, and threw away his sixth WGC title. And it was definitely, I mean, I was even watching something else. I said, I'm not even going to see it. This is going to be a washout by DJ. And I was incredibly surprised when I saw that it was Justin Rose, the one who won it. But he definitely, like you said, he caught fire with those birdies in 11, 13, 14, 16, and 17, and won by two. I mean, he could even afford a par at the closing part, 5-18. So 10th European Tour title and second WGC for the Olympic gold medalist, Justin Rose. I mean, he is feeling well, and as long as he's feeling well, he still has, like you said, a lot in his tank to go. So he's a player to be reckoned with this year. But let's talk about now the LPGA, where world number 14, Chrissy Kerr, she did not have to wait long to realize her goal of winning an LPGA event in her fourth decade. With a no-doubter 35-foot birdie putt on the 72nd hole of the Sima Darby LPGA Malaysia, Kerr, who is recently turned 40, held off a pair of millennials and a 30-something to become the 27th player on tour history to earn 20 victories. The putt also saved a two-time major winner from having to go into overtime in Sunday's already weather-delayed finale to outlast defending champion Shan Chamfong, Daniel Kan, and Jackie Conkolino by one stroke. I mean, in fact, an hour-plus weather delayed added to the day's intensity, which Kerr compounded by three putting for a bogey on the par 3 17 hole, which that enforced error came after she took a two-stroke lead on defending champion Fang, who finished with a final round of 71 with a birdie on the second hole, lost it with a double bogey on the seventh, and had to fend off Daniel Kang, who finished with a 66, Nelly Korda, who finished with a 65, Indy Shun, who finished with a 66, and Conkolino, who finished with a 67. And about that winning putt, which Kerr and her caddy, Brady Stockton, paced off again while waiting for the post-victory photo shoot, she said, and I quote, "That's probably the longest putt I have ever made to win a golf tournament. When I hit it, I could just tell it was going in. It was the most amazing thing. Like, it was the perfect speed. If it missed, it was going to be by 2 feet by. It was right in the center. Never even thought about missing." End of quote. And her win, which is the first by a tour player in her 40s since Katarina Matthew won the 2011 Lorena Ochoa Invitational at 42, was far from being a walk in the park. Rounding up the top 10 were Sungjae Park, Brooke Henderson, Stacey Lewis, and Nelly Korda in a tie for fifth, while Ingi Chung and Se-young Kim tied for ninth. Other notable finishers were Lydia Ko, who finished tied for 11 with Madeline Sackstrom, who continues her strong rise and great showing. I mean, she was only one shot behind after 36 holes, so she's really playing well. Soyeon Ryu and Lisette Salas, T13, Charlie Hall in solo 16th, Suzanne Pedersen and Carlota Siganda, T17, Minjie Lee and Angel Jin with T28, Adia Yutanagan, T33, Anna Nordqvist, T41, and Michelle Wee, T59. Fred, at 40 years old, Kristy Kerr has become the oldest champion of this tournament and is now needing just 5 points to qualify for the LPGA Hall of Fame, and she will be donating part of her winner's chair to the tournament's cancer awareness campaign. With 2 wins this year, she's definitely not done yet. I mean, I think she can make those 5 points to qualify for the LPGA Hall of Fame, and she is having one of her best years, Fred.
Yeah, she's not waiting around. She's going to get that done. She's been playing really well, and she had a great, great year on the LPGA. Hey, Carlos, he did it again, as we mentioned earlier. Who's going to beat this guy? Langer won the second stop of the Charles Schwab Cup playoffs at the Power Shares QQQ at Sherwood Country Club in L.A. He held a 25-foot birdie on the second playoff hole to defeat Miguel Angel Jimenez, which gave Langer his 7th win of the year and 2nd consecutive win in the playoffs. The only thing left now is the Charles Schwab Cup Championship to be held in 2 weeks at the Phoenix Country Club. Only the top 36 move on to the final event, and Wes Short Jr. was the only player who began the week outside that top 36 who will advance. He finished T22, was good enough to move up, and he gets the final spot. The top five in the point standings in order are Langer, of course, Scott McCarron, Kenny Perry, Miguel Angel, and Kevin Sutherland. With a points reset taking place at the finale, any player in the top five of the standings can win the Schwab Cup if he wins the Charles Schwab Cup Championship. Yeah, but that's only unless Bernhard Langer breaks his leg or something between now and then. You know, a question, how is he doing this? I mean, how is Bernhard Langer dominating like he's doing at the age of 60? Well, Brandel Chambly broke it down with a very interesting statistic on Golf Channel the other day. Langer is solid all around, but his putting is the best that has ever been recorded, not just on the Champions Tour, on any tour. We're talking the best ever, even better than Tiger Woods in 2000, Jordan Spieth in 2015, or Justin Thomas just this year. Woods took 1.71 putts per green when he was winning everything in sight. Spieth in 2015 was 1.699, just under 1.7 in 2015 when he became a shooting star on the PGA Tour. And Thomas this year was 1.694, and he won 5 times plus a major and the FedEx Cup. Langer this season is putting at a never-seen-before rate with only 1.685 putts per green. Scott McCarron, also using a long putter, is 2nd on the Champions Tour with 1.71. So, Carlos, stay with me here. I know math makes your head hurt, but if you take Scotty McCarron's, okay, 1.71 putts per green, you subtract Bernhard Langer's 1.685, that's 0.025 putts per green. So if you multiply that by a 54-hole, a three-round 54-hole tournament, that's a 1.35 stroke advantage just in 3 rounds. If you multiply it by 72 holes, you get 1.8 strokes. So Bernhard Langer starts each week on the Champions Tour with either a 1.3 or a 2-shot advantage over the rest of the field just because he's putting so much better than everybody else. That is one heck of a statistic. I was amazed when I saw it. You know, I mean, average golfers, if they have, 1.8 to 1.9 putts per green in a round, okay? So in 18 holes, if you only take about 15 or 16 putts, if you only take about 30 putts, 31 putts, something like that's pretty good, okay, for the average golfer. Less than that means maybe you're a really good chipper and you'd miss a lot of greens and you chip them close. So it's kind of misleading a little bit for the average golfer. But for these guys that hit a lot of greens, anything around 1.7, 1.75 is very, very good. And Bernhard is at 1.685. That's outstanding. Another little piece of news from the Champions Tour. John Daly collapsed on the ninth hole at Sherwood Country Club and early in the week. He was unable to put any weight on his injured right leg. He was 400 at the time he withdrew and right in contention for his second win. But he had to withdraw. He's been having some problems. Cartilage is being soft. He's got some bone spurs, and he's got arthritis. So he had hoped a cortisone shot would get him through the next few weeks. But, you know, he's got 2 weeks off. He's inside the – he's at number 33, so he's inside the top 36. So he gets to play in the final in Phoenix. So, hopefully he'll be all right for that. Carlos, that's all I have on the Champions Tour.
Yeah, referring to those putts, Bernhard Langer, he sunk a 30-foot putt on the second playoff hole, okay? He had a similar one, and first of all, it was a double breaker, okay? That 30-footer. It wasn't something easy. He had a similar putt to win on the first playoff hole, which he missed right and ended up with that par, but he made no mistake on the second time of asking. I mean, 30-foot putt. Double breaking. I mean, that was dramatic fashion once again. That's, like you said, you hit it on the nail. He's just putting like no one else. And that has helped him to win back-to-back tournaments, especially now in the Charles Schwab Cup playoffs. And interestingly, Bernhard, even though as successful as he has been, he has never actually won the Charles Schwab Cup championship. So this last tournament that he's going to play, he has never won it. But the way that he's playing right now, I mean, it's very difficult to envision him not winning that tournament. Of course, behind him in the standings, like you mentioned, are Scotty McCarron, Kenny Perry, Miguel Angel Jimenez, and Kevin Sutherland. So due to that points reset after the Power Chairs QQQ Championship, any one of the top five in the standings can still win the Cup if they win the final event. So that's about what could happen still, which I consider really, really very, I mean, it shouldn't happen.
It's ridiculous.
You see what?
It's ridiculous.
Huh?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
I mean, what?
The year
what
he has
done.
It should be done. It's over with. Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't get it. He should be receiving that title right now. But, hey, he will be looking to complete the hat trick, and I'm sure he's going to try to make it really, really, without any doubts, to be played there. Hey, there was another tournament on the PGA Tour. There was the Sanderson Farms Championship where Ryan Armour won his first PGA Tour title in style. He had never won his previous 104 starts on tour. It was his second professional victory after he won the Panama Claro Championship on the Web.com Tour in January of last year. Armour, he began the final day 5 clear and shot a bogey-free 4 under par round of 68 to win by 5 from Chesson Hadley. I mean, Armour was second in strokes gained tee to green, third in strokes gained approach to the green, and second in strokes gained putting. He moves up to a career high 156 in the world. And pre-tournament favorite Chesson Hadley was second at 14 under, meaning the Web.com Tour graduate now has to win and 3 top 3 finishes in his last 5 starts. He's really playing really well. So let's see, look out for Chesson Hadley this year. Jonathan Randolph, who's a member there at the Country Club of Jackson, was out in 29 with 7 birdies and 2 pars to challenge Armour. But he eventually finished with a 567 after coming home in a 38. He was limping there. In a tie for fourth were Smiley Coffin, Brian Stewart, and Scott Strohmeyer. Jason Kokrak, Nicholas Lineheim, and Ben Silverman tied for seventh. Ricky Barnes, Patton Kizzier, Derek Thoughthauer, Kevin Stroman, Sean Stefani, Long Taylor, and Bo Hosler rounded up the top 10 tied for that spot. Other notable finishers, Fred Hunter Mahan tied for 18th, William McGirt and Billy Hurley third, T425. Drew Love finishing at T30 while his dad, Davis Love III, missed the cut. And Angel Cabrera finishing at T34.
Hey, Carlos, just a note there. Did you know with Pat Perez at the age of 41 winning the CIMB a couple weeks ago, and now Armour winning at the age of 41, the average age of winners this year on the PGA Tour is a lot higher than last year. I think the average age right now is about 35, which is like, about almost 10 years more than what the average age of the winners were last year.
This is the time of the year where
that's
for them to play. That's for them to play.
Yeah, yeah. The old guys, but you got the young guys that just got on the, web.com or on there too. So, but yeah, it's, a couple old guys. Rod Pampling won last year, of course. So, he kicked the average up a little bit, but just a little side note there. Hey, there was a big amateur tournament last week. The Asia Pacific Amateur was held in New Zealand, and Lin Yuxin, I'm not sure about that. It's Yuxin, 17-year-old from China, won. What is the Asia Pacific Amateur? It's the premier amateur event held for Asia and Pacific Rim countries. The winner receives invitations to the Masters and the Open Championship, two huge awards for any young Asian amateur. Who's eligible? Well, invitations for the championship are sent to the leading players from the 41 Asia Pacific Golf Confederation affiliated organizations. Each organization is automatically provided with two positions, which are to be filled by their highest-ranked players from the World Amateur Golf Ranking. If there is only one or no players from a member organization in the ranking, the member organization is able to nominate one or two players accordingly, provided the players have a handicap of 5.4 or less. The remainder of the field is filled by taking the next highest-ranked players from the World Amateur Golf Ranking, with a maximum number of players allowed from any organization being six. The only exception to that is the host country, which is allowed an additional four players. Lin is a, he battled a fellow countryman, Andy Zhang, a sophomore at the University of Florida, in the final round. Lin had a one-shot lead heading to the final round, but Zhang caught him, and they stood tied on the 10th tee, which is nine holes remaining, and they remained that way through 16. Then Lin kicked it into a higher gear. He drove the 355-yard par 4 17th, made the putt, made a birdie, two-putter for birdie. Then on the next hole, on 18, a par 5, he hit a 216-yard 6-iron onto the putting surface in 2 and then made the eagle putt after Zhang had missed his eagle chance. So Lin has already played in 23 professional events. He's ranked 338th in the world and is committed to play at the University of Southern California in 2019. The win puts Lin, as I mentioned, in the Masters and the Open Championship next year. And so I'd say he's got a fairly bright future ahead of him, Carlos. Not even in college yet. He's ranked 338th in the world. And he's having a pretty good time of it.
And with that, we'll wrap up our week in backspin. Now let's talk to you about what is coming up this upcoming weekend on the Four Call with the quick previews. And Fred, the race to Dubai is going down to the final three. The playoffs are coming, and the first one is the Turkish Airlines Open. So tell us all about it.
Yeah, this is a big finish, a really big finish for the European Tour. Begins this week, the Race to Dubai World Final Series this week, 72-hole at the Turkish Airlines Open. Tommy Fleetwood holds the top spot in the European race to Dubai standings. He's had a stellar year. You've been following him all year. You're really high on this kid. He's not only had a great year on the European Tour, but he's also had a really good year in some big events worldwide. He started the year fast with a win on the Desert Swing in Abu Dhabi. Then he finished second at the WGC Mexico and fourth at the U.S. Open. So those are three pretty good events. A Rolex Series win at the HNA Open to France was followed by top 10s in the Irish and Italian Opens to leave him with a 865,000 euro lead heading into the closing three events. There's a total of 22.5 million U.S. up for grabs in these three Rolex Series events starting this week at the Regnum Carrier Golf and Spa Resort. Side note here, Carlos, the Regnum is where I was privileged to stay when I visited there a few years ago, and it is just a spectacular location, and golf course is right across the street. It's on the shores of the Mediterranean. It's really gorgeous. Trying to pass Fleetwood for the Race to Dubai bonus, Masters champion and winner 2 weeks ago in Spain, Sergio Garcia, currently ranked number 6 in the world. Justin Rose is hot off his win in China last week. World number 5, Jon Rahm, loves the big stage. You know, he's not been playing that well lately, though. Plus, Tyrrell Hatton has won twice in the past 4 weeks, and Ross Fisher finished runner-up to Hatton in those events. So you've got some pretty good players trying to catch Fleetwood and pass him. You've got the first of the Turkish Airlines Open has a total purse of $7 million. When they go to South Africa next week for the Nedbank Golf Challenge, it's $7.5 million. And then when they wrap up with the DP World Tour Championship in Dubai in 3 weeks, that has an $8 million purse. You throw in the bonus money. They're playing some pretty good money on the European Tour over the next few weeks, Carlos.
And it's surprising that Sergio usually doesn't play this early on the Race to Dubai playoffs, but he's one of the two players on the top five that are playing only, and Jon Rahm being the other one. 12 of the top 20 in the Race to Dubai are playing in the field, so expect a lot of the other, or maybe the rest of the players playing next week at the Nedbank Golf Challenge. Noteworthy would be American Peter Uihlein, who's number 16 in the Race to Dubai. Why is this important? Because the top 20 at the end of the season are eligible for the WGC Mexico Championship. So he's looking for that as well. And he obviously has a chance here. He's a number 16. He's one of the top players in the Race to Dubai. One player to look for is Victor Dubuisson, even though he's not been playing well for the past 2 years. Both victories on the European Tour have come here at the Turkish Airlines Open 2013 and 2015. If you want to watch it on TV, Thursday and Saturday, 5 to 10 a.m. on Golf Channel. Sunday, it'll be 3:30 to 8:30 a.m. also on Golf Channel. Let's talk about now the LPGA, the Toto Japan Classic, which will be played at the Taihiro Club in the Minori Course, and that will be in Ibakari in Japan. The course yardage is 6,608 yards, and we'll play at the par 72. The purse would be $1.5 million. The winner's share is $225,000. The defending champion for the second week in a row will be Shang Chongfang. This is just one of three 54-hole events on the LPGA Tour scheduled this year. It's the fourth three-round event, counting the Evian Championship, a major that was reduced to 54 holes because of rain. Soyeon Ryu, the world's number one and number two on the LPGA Tour money list, will be leading the field. She has held the number one spot for 19 consecutive weeks. Lexi Thompson is also playing. She leads the CME Race to the Globe standings. Michelle Wee will be playing in Japan for only the second time in her career. She tied for 59th in 2015. Sisters Aria and Moria Utanagan became the first sisters in LPGA Tour history to win over $1 million in the same season. Moria is number 12 on the money list with $1,070,466, while Aria is number 14 with $1,018,699. Like I said, Chan Chan Fong is the defending champion for the second straight week. She tied for second last week in Malaysia when Kerr holed her 35-foot birdie putt to win the final hole. There's no cut this week. If you want to watch this, It'll be Thursday from 11 p.m. to 2 a.m. on Golf Channel. Friday will be 11:30 p.m. to 2:30 a.m. also on Golf Channel. Saturday, it will be 10:30 p.m. to 1:30 a.m. on Golf Channel. Remember, it's only three rounds of 54 holes next week, Fred. They'll be playing the last one there before they return home. It'll be the Blue Bay LPGA in China.
Hey, Carlos, on the PGA Tour, they're finally coming back to the mainland for one of the three remaining events on the 2017-2018 wraparound schedule. The Shriners Hospitals for Children Open begins play on Thursday at TPC Summerlin in Las Vegas. It's a par 71, can play up to 7,255 yards. There are 144 players in the field, including the 2016 champion, Rod Pampling, who will be playing for a total purse of $6.8 million, with $1.224 million going to the winner. Other names of note in the field, you've got eight players from inside the top 30, but not the big names. Tony Finau, Chesson Hadley, Ryan Armour, Nick Taylor, Luke List, Annabern Lahiri, Wee Kim, and Scott Brown. Three players who were on the President's Cup team, Charlie Hoffman, Kevin Chappell, and Lahiri. You've got Webb Simpson, some other guys, Patrick Cantlay. You've got Ernie Els, Vijay Singh, Retief Goosen, Graham McDowell, Jeff Ogilvy, Webb Simpson, and Jimmy Walker. Plus, Bubba Watson's going to make his first ever appearance in Las Vegas. So my point here is that you're not seeing any guys that are named Dustin, Justin, Jordan, Jason, or Ricky. But Bubba, like we say, he's in the field. So listeners can watch all the action from Las Vegas Thursday through Saturday, 4:30 to 7:30 p.m. on the Golf Channel. And then Sunday, it's 3:30 to 6:30 p.m. on Golf Channel. Carlos?
And with that, we wrap up our weekend previews with the four call. Now it's time to take our shots on the weekend's top stories that we're going to bring you, our Par 5 news, our top five selected by us for you. And of course, I mean, yesterday, Tiger Woods announced he's back. Well, we knew he was back. He has been hinting at it and all that things with the videos and all this stuff. We just didn't know when until yesterday. And I remember, Fred, when you texted me, I really have been very busy at work this past few days. I barely made it today to the show. But when you texted me, I was like, okay, well, finally. I just hope he's not, you know, coming back too quick. But then I started to see if there was anything on Twitter. And when I see at that time, it was already number three trending story, Fred. So, I mean, this is incredible. He just says, I'm back. I'm going to play this time. And everybody's following. So tell us all the details about Tiger Woods, when he's coming back, where is he going to play, is he okay, what's going on with Tiger?
Well, as you said, he did announce via Twitter yesterday that he would tee it up at the Hero World Challenge, his tournament, November 30th through December 3rd in the Bahamas. This is Tiger's annual invitation-only buddies golf trip for the best players in the world. It's a perfect venue to host Tiger's return. There is no cut. It's basically a home course for him. Makes his sponsor, Hero, happy and gives the PGA Tour as well as the TV guys something to promote during the football season. So even though this is just a fun event, it does offer 500 FedEx Cup points to the winner and brings in a ton of change for the Woods Foundation. So Tiger's going to tee it up. We hope he does a little bit better. I think last year he was 15th out of the field of 18. Was lucky to finish that high. Did not play very well. Had a couple chunks, couple shanks, all that good stuff. So hopefully he'll play a little bit better. I don't expect much. But Tiger did have a very busy week last week as he went to court in his DUI case. He pled guilty. The judges did not award any jail time, and he was given credit for the time spent in rehab right after his arrest. As part of the DUI diversion requirements, Wood agreed to participate in various programs and abstain from illicit drugs and alcohol during a 12-month probationary period. The judge warned if he fails to meet any of the requirements, the charges could be reinstated and could send him to jail for 90 days. Carlos, I also understand there was kind of a side deal in this thing. He has to play in, like, the Sanderson Farms in Jackson, Mississippi, the Valspar, and TwoWeb.com tour events. I'm not sure. That was just a rumor. I'm not sure if that's factual or not. But so it would be good. It will be good to have Woods back in competitive golf to write and talk about, but I just don't expect any big miracle win. Matter of fact, it would be a miracle if he finished higher than that 15th he had last year. Since winning five events in 2013, Woods has only made 19 starts over the past 3 years, including his lone 2017 appearance at the Farmers Insurance Open in January. He shot 76-72 to miss the cut and then announced in April that he had undergone back fusion surgery. That was his fourth back operation in 3 years. You know, the Hero World Challenge will be a gauge to see if Woods is indeed fit and healthy enough to swing a club at full speed and play 72 holes of golf over 4 days. Can you imagine if he's able to work and practice like through December and January and come out next February with a healthy body? What might be possible? You know, we talked about this last year. I can remember saying almost exactly the same words last year when he was going to come back and try to play a little bit, and then it just, you know, things fell apart after the first of the year. I hope this works. I hope he's feeling good. I hope he's healthy. I'd love to see him play some more golf. I'd like to see him play well. But, man, he's going to be 42 here in, about 2 months. And I just don't know. I hope it works. I hope he's got 4 or 5 more years of really great golf. And, that's about all I can say, Carlos.
I'm also hoping, really, I would like for him to be competitive. I don't expect him to become number one in the world again. I really don't. But I would like for him to see him win again. I actually see him becoming a top 10 player again. Not number one, but I think he can be good enough if he stays healthy to be a top 10 player easily. I mean, I'm sure he can, but it will depend more than on his health, I think on his mind, whether he has that drive to really want to compete again, and how is his mind? How is he going to accept that he's not the same player again? Will he try to adapt? How is he going to adapt to this new Tiger Woods that he has to? He has to. He's not the same player. He doesn't have the same physical abilities. He's going to have to adapt if he's going to win. I mean, it's not impossible. We already know Jack did it. Vijay did it exceptionally well after 40. So it's not impossible. It doesn't matter who's right now the top players in the world. It can be done. This is Tiger Woods we're talking about. So hopefully he can be back. And one thing that I was talking to somebody today about this at lunch, because he asked me about why is he attracting so much attention still when he has barely been on the course and he's still having all these sorts of problems and all that, and why there hasn't been another player that has taken over that, knowing that Rory McIlroy has been out there. Jordan Spieth has been there. Justin Thomas right now is taking off. But there has been other players, young players, trying to get that spot, and none of them has been able to. I would say that until he, and this is what I said to him, and I'm telling you, if he would come back and he would be competitive, and he starts to get beaten by these young guys, and they see, and people see now that there's that passing of that torch. Okay, he's not that number one player again. Then people will start to accept these other players more and start to, because he's gonna bring that awareness to these other players that maybe there's a lot of people that haven't been really aware, even though it doesn't sound right. But yes, there's a lot of people that haven't been watching golf just because Tiger Woods hasn't been there. If he brings those people back and start watching these other players that are on top now, it's it's gonna be good anyways, because he's gonna bring more awareness again to golf, and these other players should seize that moment. And one of them, if they really get to be that good as they should be, and just get out in front of everybody else, like maybe Justin Thomas is doing now, maybe that would be the player, Fred, I think, that could capitalize on this recently newfound awareness that golf is getting with Tiger Woods bringing in. What you think?
Well, I really think it's going to be hard for someone to come in and be a Tiger Woods-like person. I see guys coming up, especially young guys coming up and having one really good year, and then their managers and everybody force them to play in all this stuff to grab the money while it's quick, and they really kind of burn themselves out. They make a ton of money. They make more money than they can ever spend the rest of their life. It loses its lure. It loses its the motivation is not there to keep competing. You just go out there and kind of do your job. You don't have that fire that you had. So I just don't see that. Jordan Spieth is the only guy that I see that just wants to beat you. He wants to beat you every time. Tiger beat down. He looked at you and he wanted to just beat the living shit out of you, okay? He wanted to beat you and then he wanted to step on your neck, okay? He wanted to just crucify you. And I don't see these guys are buddies. You know, Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, Smiley Kaufman, these guys are buddies. They have a good time. You know, Brooks Koepka and Dustin Johnson, they're buddies. They want to hang around. You know, they enjoy each other. No. Ben Hogan and Sam Snead were not buddies, okay? They were friends, but they were nice to each other, but they wanted to beat each other bad. Byron Nelson, nice guy, nicest guy in the world, but he wanted to beat you when you were on the golf course. Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, Gary Player, same thing, okay? They wanted to win. They wanted to be the top dog. I don't see it from these guys. Yeah, they want to win. They want to play well, but they don't have that fire. And Carlos, I'm going to talk about this actually just a little bit in a topic. I think maybe we're looking for the wrong thing. We're looking for Tiger Woods. Who's the next Tiger? Maybe we're looking for the wrong thing. I got an idea for that later on.
Okay, let's explore it a little bit later. But just to close the segment, no, I agree. I don't think there will be another Tiger Woods. But there would be somebody that, whoever it is, could run away with at least the top player or the top attraction. And I've always been in any sport. Let's say, for example, in basketball, it happens as well. In any sport, it happens when you have this type of player. Like when it happened with Michael Jordan, he retired, there was who's the next Michael Jordan? Who's the next? And they start pushing down your throat and this, oh, it's LeBron James. He's the one. He's the best ever. No, let the person win it. And I think that's one of the mistakes that has been happening. Who's going to be the next Tiger Woods? Just wait for it to happen. It will come out, and that's how it will be. And it's not going to be the next Tiger Woods. It will be the next dominant player. We'll talk about that, like you said, a little bit later. But, hey, there are some European Tour news, and I have three pieces here that I will summarize somehow because we can talk about each one of them for a long while. But the first one is really about something that I talked last week, and I have been saying, oh, I love this idea. I hope that it becomes something that it's going to be worldwide. I know it's going to take a long time, but it's about the Chalk Clock Masters, which is to be played next June at the Diamond Club in Austria, and it's designed to knock 45 minutes off a round. In truth, everyone was talking about that newfangled European Tour event before this week's WGC HSBC Champions. And to recap what it is, if you don't know it yet, competitors will be timed over every shot and will be given a one-shot penalty on every occasion they have a bad time. The field will be 120 strong, and a player will have 50 seconds to play when he's up first and 40 seconds thereafter. In addition, each individual will have two timeouts when he can have access to twice his normal allocation of seconds. So it's like, okay, let me have it. When you're in the NFL and you want to review, you take some more time. That's like the timeout that you're going to have. And that is something that is good. I mean, there's going to be some few shots that you might need to think about it. And you say, okay, timeout, let me think about it. So if it's 50 seconds, you will have double that, which is a minute 40 seconds. If it's 40 seconds, it'll be a minute 20. So one of the persons that talked about this, I mean, there were a lot of players, but like Henrik Stenson's, his first observation was that it might be more stressful than the norm, but basically, I mean, he said 50 seconds and the 40 seconds certainly will provide enough time. He thinks that at the beginning, this will be an issue, but obviously, it'll be something that people will get accustomed to. He said that will certainly one of those timeouts, he would love to have them available for that 12th short hole in Augusta, where it takes ages to decide where the wind is going. But definitely, he said, you know, this is something that players should get used to. Paul Dunn, who is the Irish golfer, that he identifies himself as a slower golfer, you know, but he's also saying that this could work for the best. I mean, it will make some hip people not happy, and some yes, some not, but it certainly, it makes him frustrated to see how people take so much time to take shots. Scott Hahn from Australia, he was an all-out enthusiast about this. I mean, everybody that you talk about from the European side is like, yeah, that's great, let's do it. But when you ask Americans, let's say, like Charles Howell III, he said that the whole question plays is like, is it slow play a problem, or is it something that we're making out to be a problem where it isn't such a big issue after all? Yes, Charles, it is a big problem. The problem is that you like to play slow, and so is American golfers. We're used to here for that slow play, take as much as you want to try to find the best shot. But hey, if everything, it's just like Dustin Johnson was saying, yeah, Charles Howell was saying that he would hate for a tournament to be decided because a player would have to rush into taking a shot that he wanted to take more time to think about it. Charles, this is my answer to you. If everybody takes the same time, has the same deadline to have all the shots, you're telling me that you're only better because you have to take more time to take a shot, and that makes you better. If it's equal for everybody, conditions are equal for everybody, you have the same shot that everybody's going to have. Okay, just play fast. That's it. Stop this madness about being thinking for minutes about which shot you're going to take. Dustin Johnson said it. I mean, I know it's going to be, they're going to be, if he would like to see it being played here on the PGA Tour for certain, there would be a lot of penalties going this. And he said that he would have to be one of them that would have to be adjusted, but he would love to see the shot clock there. And he said, well, I know there are going to be a lot handed out on tour, but he will be okay. So, I mean, let's go. Let's do it. I know that this will take some time, and the European Tour is going to be done. And I was recently playing round of golf with a British player. And he told me, do you know that your countrymen take a lot of time to play their shots, right? And I said, yes, I know. At least I know. I'm not one of them. So, yeah, it's such a difference between the Europeans and the Americans. I mean, that you can see that there. So that's why I don't see it happening anytime soon on the PGA Tour. But hopefully, you know, once it starts to get kicking in on the European Tours, it would be something that definitely it will be accepted worldwide. Another thing is that in the European Tour, the Rolex series have made many of the tour pros richer, but tournaments have risen the ceiling for the European Tour qualifying school grads to keep their cards, making it more difficult because now more money is being handed over to the players. So what the qualifying school grads had to earn, which is approximately $163,000 more than last season to keep their cards due to more money being available. So while one thing is good that there are more money to be done there, but those qualifying school grads now have to, it's a lot difficult because they have to earn more money. But at the same time, if you come to think about it, hey, they had to finish, they if they continue to increase their play, is equal. This is another thing that is equal for everyone. I mean, I know the ceiling has been, the bottom line has been risen, but there's more money also to be achieved. I mean, you don't need a PhD in advanced mathematics to realize that it's harder to keep a card for those who play only in low-purse tournaments. Last place money in the 7 million tournaments is 13,000 compared to 2,000, say, in the Joburg Open. I mean, he drops 1,000 in the bottom of the food change, Portugal Open, an event worth just $590,000. Joburg Portugal, the SA Open, the Shawani Open, Lioness, and other low purse tournaments are the starts for most of the qualifying school grads. But again, I mean, there's no easy fix to it. The obvious answer will be for them, play better. I mean, golf was never meant to be fair, and professional golf is a straightforward example of Darwin's survival of the fittest theory. However, it seems those guys who stump up $2,100 for 10 rounds of hell hoping to get a tour card aren't getting as fair deal as previous competitors. And finally, on the European Tour, Paul Casey has now thrown his name into the hat for the 2018 European Ryder Cup team. By rejoining the European Tour, he rejoins the tour after leaving it in 2015. As you might remember, he has a young child and has been living in Arizona for some time now, making it difficult for him to balance on the life on the European Tour and the PGA Tours while making time for his family. And right now, one of the things is for him that now the schedule and the requirements are different. So while he will have to play a little bit more on the European Tour, he obviously sees a little bit more for him feasible. He has already spoken to Thomas Bjorn, who will be the captain next year, so in the hope that he can play a key role on the European side next year. He will obviously have to play some other additional tournaments to the ones that he plays. He could also play any of the Middle East swing, which comprises the Abu Dhabi Championship, the Qatar Masters, and the Dubai Desert Classic. He has won also the Abu Dhabi Championship twice, so you might see him there. Another tournament that you might expect to see him play would be the BMW PGA Championship at Wentworth, which he also won in 2009. So, you know, he has won 13 European Tour titles. His last victory in the European Tour was the 2014 KLM Open. But one of the things that he did say was that he was tired of seeing and suffering, seeing how he could not help his European Tour players play on the Ryder Cup, and he wants to do something about it. With Paul Casey, definitely, that team next year is going to get a real upgrade. Paul Casey may be the most consistent European Tour player right now in the world, Fred.
Yeah, you're exactly right about Paul Casey. He would be a great addition to that Ryder Cup team. You know, you're talking about time of play, I always take the other side of this thing. I'm not a big fan of speeding up. I'm a fan of speeding up play, but I'm not a fan of forcing players to speed up play, I guess. The players take care of it, can police that, they can take care of it themselves. But I am curious to see how this will work, this European Masters thing with the clock on. That doesn't seem like much time to me. But when you get your ball, look at your shot, choose your club, fire away. You know, maybe that's the way to do it. That's okay. And then, you know, you talk about the European Tour Q School grads not getting into the right tournaments. And, you know, that's like Kurian always says. You know, he says, you know, there's two European Tours now. There's the European Tour with the Rory McIlroys and the Justin Roses and the big names, the Sergio Garcias. And then there's the other European Tour, the minor events, let's say, that, and now those are the non-Rolex series events that have the smaller purses and that, you know, the lesser guys get in, but even if they win, they don't make as much money. So, or if they get top tens, they don't make as much money. So that's just where the European Tour is at right now. You and I are both fans of Keith Pelley and what he's doing to keep that tour going and make it grow. And This Rolex Series thing, yeah, has made it tougher maybe for some of the younger guys. But, you know, if they're going to make it, they'll figure out a way. They'll figure out, those young guys, if they're good, they'll figure out a way to get it done. Hey, Carlos, Nick Price has participated in golf at the highest level for a long time. Now he's going to be in on the administration of the game at the highest level with the USGA as a member of the executive committee. Price won a total of 18 PGA Tour events, including three major championships. He was the number one ranked player in the world for 43 weeks in 1993 and 1994. Price has also been the captain of the international team for the President's Cup, was voted into the World Golf Hall of Fame in 2003, and awarded the USGA's highest honor, the Bob Jones Award, in 2005. He's had a long association with USGA Executive Director Mike Davis, and through this friendship, Davis persuaded Price to sit on the board. Price said, "I think a lot of Mike Davis and the direction the USGA has taken under his leadership in recent years. We have been talking about a role on the executive committee for about a year, and I wasn't sure what I could do or what I could contribute. But the more we talked, I became certain it was something I wanted to do." The executive committee of the USGA is a 15-member volunteer group that serves as the association's executive policy-making board, much like a board of directors. They advise a senior leadership team headed up by Executive Director Mike Davis, who oversees the day-to-day operation of the USGA. Price's background as a player and understanding of technology issues that confront golf should provide him the unique insight into how best to approach future changes to the game of golf. Usually the members of the USGA are stuffy attorneys or other pillars of industry that think they know a lot about golf. I think this should be taken as a very good sign that the USGA is serious about becoming more professional in its handling of its big events, especially the U.S. Open, which they have had a fairly dismal record of botching over the past several years. So I hope Price can bring that professional attitude to the USGA and help them going forward, Carlos.
Totally agree with that. Hey, let me tell you about Australian PGA Tour veteran Robin Allenby, who has had a...
Did he get kidnapped again? Did he get locked up in the trunk of a car? What happened?
He had a rough few years lately, both on and off the course, especially, like you're saying, off the course. But with a spot in this past week's Sanderson Farms Championship, Allenby told Evan Priest of the Australian outlet The Age that he is refreshed and hoping to turn things around. But before we get to those comments, let's first review what has publicly transpired over the past three seasons, which, like you have just mentioned, we have covered as well at large here. In the most infamous incident of all, Allenby claimed he was kidnapped, beaten, and robbed after missing the cut at the 2015 Sunny Open in Hawaii. Later, it was discovered that the struggling Allenby was highly intoxicated at a nearby strip club that night. Then, that summer at the Canadian Open, Allenby fires his caddy in the middle of his first round and enlisted a fan to carry his bag the rest of the way. 1 year later, Allenby was arrested for disorderly conduct at an Illinois casino after missing the cut at the John Deere Classic. All the while, Allenby faltered inside the ropes. He lost his card after missing 21 of 23 cuts in 2016, then failed to reclaim his card during a full season on the Web.com Tour in 2017. He missed 10 of 16 cuts there. After all this, he considered retiring altogether and revealed it was not the first time he considered hanging up the clubs. But then Allenby told Priest, and I quote, "I was thinking I'd take a couple of years off and get ready for the Champions Tour at age 50, end of quote. But now Allenby has decided to make one last go at recovering his PGA Tour career and adding to his four career tour wins, and says an injury and forced break has him feeling reborn. As he revealed to Priest, he says, "I feel great, refreshed. I haven't felt this good in years. My number one goal is to get full status on the PGA Tour. I know I can still win. I know I still got it in me." Well, Fred, let me tell you, whether the whether or not the 885th ranked player in the world can make good on that goal is yet to be seen. But we should get an idea in the next few weeks. At least he's not ranked 1,180 like Tiger Woods is, Fred.
Is that where Tiger's at right now, 1180? That's where he's at?
Yeah, 1180 is where he is right now.
Oh, man. Oh, wow. Yeah, I don't know. Allenby, he's always good for a joke or a laugh, I guess, lately. But I hope, I want him to do well. I hope he does well. Good luck to him. Hey, I saw this story, and I just thought we ought to talk about it a little bit. You know, I mean, this is the kind of stuff I like to read and talk about, what life on the professional golf tour is really all about. In a player feature on the LPGA website, Jackie Stolting wrote about her less-than-spectacular year on tour. Jackie concluded her season by traveling halfway around the world to New Zealand to compete in the Mackaysen New Zealand Women's Open a couple weeks ago. It was the final full-field event of the year and the last tournament Jackie would play this year, having not qualified for the tour's limited field events in Asia. Coming into the week at number 107 on the LPGA Tour money list, she needed a great finish in New Zealand to even keep her card for next year. She started the week with rounds of 71-68, pretty good, put her in the top 10 heading into the weekend, but then her week and her season completely unraveled. After beginning the tournament without a bogey in her first 47 holes, she finished the third round with six bogeys and a double to post a 7-9. She couldn't rebound on Sunday, adding a 77 to her total to drop to 109 on the money list, and she lost her card. Jackie explained what went wrong. I couldn't make it stop. It was a combination of really bad luck, wrong club choice at times, and a mental lapse. I went from the top 10 to 73rd place in a matter of 2 hours. It was heartbreaking, as I knew I had to play well to keep my card. Sunday's round was a disaster, and mentally I was checking out. Carlos, I think we've all been there, and no matter how hard you try, the golf game just continues to go sideways, and that happens in life too. You know, no matter what you do, no matter how hard you work, sometimes it just doesn't work. And especially when you add the pressure of needing to perform to keep your job or your income, it becomes even more difficult. Her 2017 season included getting food poisoning after her first round of the season in the Bahamas and missing the cut. She missed the cut in Australia, and it wasn't until March at the Kia Classic that she finally started to get a little better. She made her first cut at the Kia Classic, was tied for the lead through 46 holes, finished T18, and she got qualified to get into the ANA Championship, the first major year. She made the cut in five of her next six starts, and then went low in Canada to post a career-best 64. She shared the lead there for a second time this season and ended up finishing high. Then, at the Meyer Classic in Grand Rapids in June, she developed a sports hernia in her lower abdomen. It's extremely difficult to swing a golf club with a sore stomach muscle. At the time, she was 5 weeks into a stretch of 8 straight weeks on the road. This became a huge obstacle, and you know, she couldn't practice, and she had to cut back. Rather than take time off, she tried to limit the pain, and it just, you know. Well, anyhow, Jackie has failed to retain her LPGA Tour card before. She was a rookie in LPGA Tour in 2014, but a poor year sent her back to the Sumatra Tour. She won 4 times in 2 years, and that experience taught her an important lesson, which has helped her cope with this year's challenges. She said, I think I needed to fail to be able to win and gain confidence. Sometimes things are harder to see the reason at the time, and I'm still trying to figure that out from things that happened this year. Other problems this year, she's had to deal with a rather sudden death of her mother-in-law during the season. Her husband, Travis, is also her caddy, and they both felt the loss. Jackie did qualify for the KPMG Women's PGA Championship, but after that, she had a T36, a T39, and a T30 were her only made cuts in her last 6 events. Boom. She ends up at number 109, back to Symetra Tour for next year. On top of everything, Jackie and her husband live in Fort Pierce, Florida, so they even had to deal with not being able to go home after Hurricane Irma passed through. Physical ailments, constant travel, miscuts, deaths, hurricanes. That's just normal everyday fare for a professional golfer, Carla. Carlos, it's a wonder they do the spectacular things they do on the golf course. But, of course, that's why they all play, to find those special moments when it all comes together and the magic happens. Carlos, before we leave here tonight, I want to I want to mention just a little bit. Ohio Golf Journal offers Golfaholics a diverse collection of topics that cover every area of golf. Tips to help your game, rules, explanations, equipment reviews, travel to the best golf resorts, history and opinion on current golf issues are covered every month. Ohio Golf Journal has some of the best golf writers that provide their knowledge on the game of golf. In the October issue, we talked about the story behind the renovation of Inverness Club in Toledo. We talked to the newest member of the PGA Hall of Fame, Renee Powell, and there were tips for golf cart safety. So visit ohiogolfjournal.com, click on the cover and read the whole magazine, or click on any article that catches your eye. Plus, don't forget to watch Back Nine Report TV on Roku for a different take on golf news. And there's going to be a new episode of Back Nine Report TV coming out either tomorrow or Friday, Wednesday or Thursday. Wednesday, tomorrow or Thursday. So watch for that. Carlos, back to you.
And with that, we wrap up our Par 5 news. And now we'll talk on the practice range, what you have been waiting for. I mean, this past week, we can safely say that it was the topic of the whole week until then Tiger Woods decided to tweet that he was going to get back. But everybody should be knowing that our topic, I'm just going to name it Emily Natch. You all know what we're going to talk about. Emily Natch, 16 years old. She plays golf where she attends school, which is at Lunenburg High School in Massachusetts. She was playing from the boys' tees. She earned the best score in the Central Mass Division III boys' golf tournament. Her score helped her team move up, too. I mean, no problem counting her contribution to the team's record. But her record? Wash away. Thank you very much. I mean, her first place trophy and title, which can help on golf scholarship applications, was awarded to a boy four strokes behind her. And he publicly accepted it. Although privately, she says he later offered it to her and she appreciated that. Not only did Natch not get the opportunity to visibly receive the recognition she earned on the field, the champion watched her title go to another. That young man can move forward to the state championships while she is held back. Washington Post writer Callum Borchers summed it up very well, and I'm going to quote him. Natch is the best Division III golfer, male or female, in central Massachusetts, and maybe one of the best high school players in the entire state, but she won't have a chance to prove it because she is a girl. End of quote. You know, Emily said that she wasn't aware that if she won, she wouldn't get the title or the trophy, and feels like it's a bit unfair. Professional golf associate and writer TJ Alclair agrees. I mean, he wrote, it's 2017. This rule sounds like it was created in 1917. So, Fred, this being said, this is the setup for this. I mean, we have some questions that we have to answer. I mean, should girls be allowed to play in boys' events? Should there be not boys and girls divisions? I mean, golf is golf, right? What's the difference? It's not a contact sport. So what would you have to say about this?
Well, first of all, Carlos, should girls be allowed to play in boys' events? You know, I've actually changed my mind about this over the years. As I have aged, have I gotten wiser? Well, I'm not too sure about that. But, I kind of compare it like this. If you take the sex issue out of the equation, if a young woman is talented enough to post scores and play the same course as the boys, yes, they should be allowed to compete in golf. I'm not a believer of that in other sports because I have personally seen what happens when a 14-year-old boy collides with a 14-year-old girl in a co-ed soccer match. It was not pretty. It involved a severely broken leg for the young lady. You know, there's just too much size and strength difference by that time to have co-ed contact sport kind of thing. But in golf, it's a little different deal. So in golf, you can kind of compare it like the McKenzie Tour to the Web.com Tour to the PGA Tour. The girls can be a lower division of high school golf, and they could move up to the boys if they qualify. In this case, the young lady in question, Emily Bash, she definitely qualified. I mean, she won the whole division. So why shouldn't she be awarded the trophy and recognition? You know, I don't understand it. It seems pretty stupid to me. They could have changed it, I would think, very easily, very quickly, very quietly, but they chose not to. So, Carlos, that's my thought on your first question. I'll throw it back to you for any retort.
I think that, yes, I mean, I'm going to talk a little bit about this on the next topic on this one. But, yeah, I think they should be allowed to play the boys. I don't foresee why, like, the third question, which is golf is golf, what's different? It's not a contact sport. I mean, I have no problem and no issue as long as that is the reason. I mean, if we were talking about football or maybe basketball and all that, yes, that would be different. But here, I mean, if they can truly play at the same conditions as the boys, and like what happened with Emily, and she's able to play under the same conditions and win, I think the first mistake was, why are you allowing her to play and then say, no, well, it was just for showing, thank you for playing here, we're not going to give you the trophy. No, I mean, that was the wrong thing here. And, yes, I totally agree they can play as long as they play the same conditions. Because then this is part of what I'm going to talk on the LPGA and the PGA Tour and the LPGA. But as long as they play the same conditions, I totally agree that they can play.
Well, you know, I definitely want to see different divisions for boys and girls. We want young women to not become frustrated and compete with the same level competition. So they want to continue to play golf in their adult lives. You know, some high schools are small, don't have a girls' team. And if this were the case and my daughter wanted to compete, plus could beat the boys, she should be allowed to play. Years ago, the small school in my hometown had a young lady that played on the boys' team all year long. No big deal. She did great. She won some matches. The team did very well. She went on, actually married a pro golfer. you know, it was nothing too big. But, you know, golf is golf. It's not a contact sport. And the basic tenet of competitive golf is that the low score wins. There's nothing in there about being a woman, man, or vegetable, for that matter. If a girl or woman can post a lower score than a man, then they win the event, period. Over, done. I just cannot believe in this day of political correctness, the Massachusetts Interscholastic Athletic Association would even consider not awarding Emily Nash the trophy for winning against the boys. That just completely blows my mind, Carlos.
I mean, David Cohen, the law professor at Drexel University, says that these rule raises Title IX concerns. I mean, the MIAA could have kept girls out of the boys' tournament completely without consequence, including Nash without giving her a chance to truly win, is what makes it unequal right now. But, I totally agree. There should still be divisions, but I do think, like it happens on the LPGA Tour or the PGA Tour for a fact. I mean, like you're saying, in golf you play the ball. You don't play the opponent. The fact that makes golf one of the few viable sports where women can compete with men on somewhat of an even playing field, somewhat. So it's not all surprising that a few LPGA players have taken the plunge in giving the PGA Tour events a try. I mean, you might remember the now-retired Annika Sörenstam, one of the great LPGA Tour champions with 32 titles, including 10 majors. She missed a cut one time when she crossed over to play the PGA Tour's Colonial Tournament in 2003. And a young Michelle Wee has entered, you know, the men's forum on numerous occasions with the 2006 Asian Tour SK Telecom Open being the one time in 13 attempts that she has made the cut. For those women who do try, it's really an immense challenge. But on the men's tour, let's say this way, I mean, the fairways are generally longer, not to say that the whole course is a lot longer, but the fairways are generally longer, narrower, the greens are harder and faster. It's true, I mean, women are getting stronger, technically improved equipment adds length to shots, but for the most part, the men still have more power. That's just genetics. I'm not saying, and I know it might get a backlash, but it's true. I mean, it's just genetics, and that's a huge advantage. The longer the tee shot, the shorter the approach, which makes it easier to get close to the hole for better chances. Sörenstam knew that difference before heading to the Fort Worth for the Colonial, but was eager to see how she would fare in the once-in-a-lifetime challenge. She became the first woman back then since Babe Didrikson Zaharias in 1945 to give the men's tour a shot. And we all know Babe was an incredible athlete. I mean, all-around athlete that had everything going for her. And she tried, and she didn't do it as well. I mean, I remember when it was announced that she was going to accept the sponsor exemption, it raised more than a few eyebrows. And Vijay Singh withdrew from the event in protest. And Nick Price called it a publicity stunt. But the one that played with Michelle Wee, which was Craig Bowden, he embraced it. I mean, he said, sure. I mean, she's a competitor. But then he said, well, could a woman win on the PGA Tour? No, absolutely not. Could a woman make the cut? Sure, absolutely. But the big question is whether a woman playing in a men's event is a hole-in-one or a bogey for the game. Would that be good? That be bad? I think that it's good because it really broadens the appeal of golf. If women are going to make it anywhere in men's sports, golf will be the logical place. I'm not saying they're going to win right off. I mean, as for whether they would be welcome to tee off with the men in the future, well, that seems to be still on the cards, but definitely they have to play from the men's tees, which is the different thing there. And the difference is there's no rule on the PGA Tour right now that would say, no, they cannot play in the men's game, Fred.
Yeah, Carlos, as you mentioned, we've seen women compete on the PGA Tour in the past. Annika was the first. Michelle Wee gave it a go a couple of times. Susie Whaley actually qualified for a PGA Tour event by winning her PGA section tournament. You know, she played pretty well, but and she's a very good player, but, you know, just really couldn't compete with the men at the PGA Tour level. You know, the results have been mixed, but I'm gonna tell you something, Carlos, and you can write this down. In the not-too-distant future, there will be a young lady that comes along so dominant in the women's game that she will compete on the PGA Tour. Will she win? I'm like you. I'm not so sure about that. But I see a woman being able to keep her card and be competitive on the PGA Tour down the road. Why? The girls are getting much better training at a younger age. There will be the right mix of athletic ability, strength, and mental toughness to compete with the men. So, Carlos, that's, you know, we talk about who's the next Tiger Woods, okay? I think we're asking the wrong question. Who's going to be the first young lady that's able to compete effectively on the PGA Tour? Maybe 10, 15, 20 years from now. It's going to happen. I'm telling you, it's going to happen. I'm absolutely convinced of it. I'm not sure when. I mean, you look at Suzanne Pedersen. She is an unbelievable, not now, but, you know, like 5-6 years ago, she was an unbelievable physical specimen. Very strong, very fit. If she was just a little bit bigger, just a little bit, she'd have an extra 25, 30 yards that would have made the difference and made her competitive with the guys. There are other women that are like that also. So I'm saying it's going to happen sometime. It's not if, it's just when. You know, this whole Emily Nash thing, Steve Eubank subbed it up very nicely in Global Golf Post this week. He, and I quote, "This one is simple. Emily won, period. To not allow her to be so honored, to deny her entry into her high school championship is more than a travesty. It's an assault on common sense." Plus, we mentioned Susie Whaley. She knows a little bit about gender discrimination and what it takes to break through the old boys club barriers. She has won PGA Section Advance, qualified for and competed on the PGA Tour. Next fall, she's going to become the first female president of the PGA of America, one of golf's largest ruling bodies. Whaley said, "Rules can be changed, and in this circumstance, the rule needs to change. I will absolutely stand up for anyone who wins a tournament from the same tees, on the same course, on the same day, under the same conditions as everyone else in the field. To do otherwise is just wrong." Carlos, I guess I've got one little final thought, but I'll turn it back to you for whatever else you got.
Yes, I mean, the outpouring of support continues for Emily Nash. LPGA Tour stars, including Brittany Lincecum, Daniel Kang, and Stacey Lewis, are featured in a video titled hashtag Emily Won, posted on Saturday to the LPGA Tour's Twitter account, where they say, "Hey, Emily Nash, there are many LPGA players who have a message for you. Keep up the great playing." Lincecum says in there, "I just wanted to congratulate you on your win. I had to play on the boys team. I know how hard it is to compete against them. Way to kick butt, and we're rooting for you. Good luck." Also, Brittany Altomare, who is a Massachusetts native who played in the boys' high school state championship, told the Global Golf Post that, "I honestly can't believe it. I'm at a loss of words. If you're going to allow a girl to play on a boys' team and her score can count for the team, why not as an individual? You're allowing a girl to compete on the boys' team all year, and she can't go to state even though she earned it? It doesn't make any sense to me. It's backward thinking." You know, Megan Kang, also from Massachusetts, tweeted about the incident. Jane Park also took it to Twitter. She really was hard on that one. Mel Reed at home from England. I mean, it was all over the hashtag Emily Won, which several LPGA players included in their tweets, trended on social media after this happened on Saturday. Like I said, that video was posted. But I would just have to say, I mean, to me, it's definitely something that should have never happened. I totally have to agree with you. This raises some uncomfortable questions for any team moving forward. And if sports are a training ground for life, what are we being taught about this? I mean, think of the lessons that she just received and the different takeaway the boy playing with her got. It goes something like this. I mean, girls can play when guys can take the credit. That may sound harsh, but let me just share an echo of this reality from the lunch I had last week. And when it came down to who was left to run a company, it was one person and three other guys. Each guy got placed automatically in the next role. The role he would be most likely to fill and was doing, run an exhaustive global search, and the others automatically got promoted. I mean, this Nash dynamic is playing out in our teams on the field right now, and it should be erased. Don't teach the wrong lessons to our youngsters. You're just saying it just pays off just to show up, be second, because somehow you're going to be rewarded as long as a girl is the one that does the job. So, no, definitely, I mean, there's a if, like I said, if sports are the training ground for life, I mean, this is not a good lesson. But it's great to see the stars supporting Emily Nash across the golf world. And hopefully, the MIAA sees the backlash that is happening right now and changes the rules, and this moves forward and creates some awareness for what has to be done as changing the rule for it. Any other final words before we move on?
Yeah, just real quickly, Carlos. This whole thing is just simply amazing to me that in today's society, a state institution could take such an irrational stand. Someone needed to have a cooler head and say, this is wrong and we need to change it now. In the end, however, it probably has more an effect on us than it really did on the young lady. She knows she won. Further, the boys know she won. That, in the end, is the most important. And Miss Nash will go on to have a successful college golf career, I'm sure, and hopefully enjoy it before she goes on to maybe get married, raise a family, and get old like you and me. In the big equation, this is just a little blip in her life. She seems to be dealing with it just fine. If we would leave her alone, I think everything's going to work out all right, Carlos. But I hope Massachusetts gets this taken care of for future.
Hopefully it will. And with this, we wrap up our practice range where we talked about Emily Nash. Hopefully you got some insight of it. If you haven't heard of it, it was something that shouldn't happen. And we're hoping that it really gets out the word and something gets done about this. Now let's move to our VIG, very important guest of the week. It's Bill Cuevas. He's the golf father. His reviews of golf equipment, apparel, and travel can be read at golfball.com as well as in the Ohio Golf Journal. Plus, he's a regular guest on Big's Golf Talk Show radio show. Bill is also one of the most widely followed golfaholics on Twitter and Facebook. He follows golf closely and loves to spread the word about the most current golf trends. So, Fred, tell us about this interview.
Yeah, Bill is a good friend. We have been going back and forth on Twitter for many, many years. And the last few years, we've gotten to know each other a little bit, gone on a couple of golf trips together, and he's a lot of fun to be around. He's great. He loves to be on social media, interact with people. And if you're a golfer, and just look up at Bill Cuevas on Twitter, or log on to him. He's got something going all the time. But, Carlos, we touched our base on several different subjects, so go ahead and roll the tape. Bill Cuevas is our guest today on Back Nine Report. Bill is the golf father. He's deeply involved with all things golf on Twitter and Facebook, and you can normally see his writing on golfball.com, and he can also be heard as a regular guest on Big's Golf Talk. Bill, welcome to Back Nine Report.
Hey, Fred. Thanks for having me.
Listen, we've got to do some traveling this summer, some great golf courses. We had a lot of fun up in Michigan. Really good to see you again up here and getting around at Boyne and Forest Dunes and at Gull Lake. And, man, you had quite a tour this summer in Michigan.
Oh, I had a great time in Michigan. I went up there three separate occasions. I visited the south, the middle, and part of the north. I haven't hit the upper peninsula, but there is so much to do. And I was out there for quite a while, and I just barely scratched the surface. I'm so looking forward to next golf season.
Hey, Bill, we also want to talk about, you wrote an article for us. It's in the Ohio Golf Journal about an experience at the PGA Superstore club fitting. Tell our listeners a little bit about that and what they might want to look for if they need a club fitting.
And they reached out to me and said, hey, are you interested in doing a fitting? And I had recently, at that particular time, it was like four other places that asked me to go do fittings with them. So I was like, you know what, let me do it. I've never done it. I went out there, and I ended up having a real treat. It lasted about an hour. I ended up gaining 23 yards, being properly fit, took their time, and the price of $49 is for a one-on-one fitting. You get, you know, multiple shaft changes and head changes. They don't try to change your swing. They don't tell you what you're doing wrong. They are spot on trying to work with your swing. They never try to alter my swing because, as you know, you saw me. I have a problem a little bit, you know, casting. They just fit me. They fit the club to me instead of me to the club. So it was kind of really neat. It was a simple, painless process. I thought they were going to try and change my swing. They didn't, but I walked out there with an extra 23 yards, and you can't beat that.
You would definitely recommend this for any casual golfer, any golfer looking to improve or maybe struggling in some areas. Go get fit at PGA Superstore, right?
Yes, absolutely. Any golfer. I mean, I had already gotten fit, and unfortunately I was still in the wrong equipment. But I'd say every couple of years you need to get refit as you get better. New technology out there, get fit. It's a must.
Bill, another thing you've been doing recently, I know you've been spending a lot of time at Top Golf. You were in Indiana at the Top Golf. You were in Tampa. You were at the new store in Orlando. And why are you spending so much time at Top Golf? What's going on with that? Tell me a little bit about Top Golf.
I don't know. I've been really blessed. They've invited me out to several events. I was out in Indiana doing the Folds of Honor. The Indiana hadn't opened up officially, but they invited me to go tour it. I got a nice special tour, and we actually interviewed them and talked more about it and what was different about it. You know, I found out that their fences are 16 feet higher than any other Top Golf in the nation. So it's pretty cool, you know, getting to visit all these different ones. Then, of course, you know, I went to the Orlando one. You know, I got some VIP. I don't know how or why, but sure to kind of show me a lot of love, and I appreciate it. So I got to mingle with, you know, the likes of Johnny Damon was there, Annika Sorenstein was there, and, you know, Joey Fatone from, Backstreet Boys. And, I mean, it was just amazing.
Do you give Johnny Damon some hitting tips? Maybe he could revive his Major League Baseball career?
I don't know. I don't know if I could give him any tips, but, you know, seeing him out there, and I actually got a tweet from him, so it was actually cool after the fact. So I was happy. I was like, wow, it's a great way to wake up and see Johnny Damon acknowledges your tweets. It's pretty cool and neat.
Bill, one other thing that you have been very active, well, I know you're always active in Folds of Honor, and we can talk about that another time. That's a great program. Major Dan Rooney and Major Ed Pulido, they do a fantastic job with that program, traveling around the country promoting that, and I know you help with their marketing and their promotion. But another thing we want to talk about today while you're here, Dog Leg Reaper. I know you've been spending some time talking about that. What is that product?
They have belts with no holes. They're donating $13 from every sale of the Folds of Honor belts that they have. And everybody, you know, 13 might be a creepy number or whatever, but it stands for the folds in our flag, the 13 folds. So they're donating $13, which is a significant number. And, I mean, instead of percentage, you're talking about regardless, $13 from every belt sold. It's American-owned. You have veterans that are running this company that own it, and they're giving back. They know what it is to pay the ultimate sacrifice, and they're more than happy to give back, whether it be the Folds of Honor. This whole month of October, they've done for cancer. They donated 100% of every single belt that they sold that was pink for cancer awareness. I mean, there's not a lot of small companies out there that can do that.
So you're kind of killing two birds with one stone. You're promoting a new company that really has a great product, but also you're helping out your friends at Folds of Honor as well.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're a friend of the Folds, you're a friend of mine. There's so many people that don't get to come home from war. We don't want to leave their kids alone. I've seen the program over the last 10 years. Like you said, we could do that maybe on another show. They give so much back, and just helping promote, just getting the word out. You never know who you can find, who you can touch. It's a beautiful thing, man. It's a win-win for everybody. You get a great product, which is a great belt, and you get to support a great cause all at the same time. And it's a great price. It really isn't, you know, bad at all.
Well, for our listeners out there, we've been talking to Bill Cuevas. You can find Bill on Twitter at @WCUEBES. And also, he's the golf father. You can see his writing on golfball.com and hear him on Biggs Golf Talk. Bill is an expert on equipment. He does a lot of equipment reviews. He does a lot of traveling, does a lot of golf travel resorts reviews, and he knows everything about all things golf. So, Bill, thanks for being on our show today.
Thanks for having me on, Fred. I appreciate it.
There you have it. That was Bill Cuevas, our VIG, very important guest of the week. He's the golf father. So Great to have him on the show and talk about. I mean, he's, like you said, one of the characters here for golf, and he's followed closely golf for years and loves to spread the word about it. So great to have him, Fred. Hopefully we'll have him more on the show. Some words before we move on to our final thoughts.
Yeah, we were definitely going to have Bill on the show. He has a great backstory. Someday I'm going to tell that story. It's very inspiring and very inspirational. So he truly feels that golf saved his life. And he wants to give back to the game as much as he can. That's why he does what he does. And he just loves the game of golf. And he's a joy to be around. He's a lot of fun. So back to you, Carlos.
Now let's go to our final putts. I'm going to start right away with mine, Japanese golf star Hideki Matsuyama. You know, one of my favorite players, is looking forward to a fun day when he takes on the course with U.S. President Donald Trump. He's the world number four for now, and Trump and Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe will tee it off when the president visits Japan between November 5 to 7 as part of his Asian tour. The game is due to take place at the Kasumigaseki Country Club in Kawagoe near Tokyo. As you know, this is going to be where the Olympics are going to be played. But Matsuyama, who has enjoyed a fine 2017 with three PGA Tour wins and tied for second place at the U.S. Open, promised to keep the conversation away from the politics over the greens and fairways, although he has no idea how this opportunity came about. I mean, you can see this is how you should do it. This is the approach. It doesn't matter. This is about playing golf. This is not politics. He said that it's going to be an honor to play with the Prime Minister from Japan and the President of the United States, and he will have a fun day as a professional golfer, not a politician. This is about sports. Trump has already played with Tiger Woods, Rory McIlroy, and the women's world number three, Lexi Thompson. So Matsuyama, meanwhile, is focused on protecting his professional pride when competing against Trump. He said, I'll try to do my best and, you know, not lose to him. I don't think it'll be that difficult, but we'll see. On the other side, former President Barack Obama, it seems to be still playing around golf. I mean, to hear Steph Curry tell it Monday, it was a dream Sunday golf round at Dallas National, made possible by a perfect storm. Let's see, I mean, Barack Obama happened to be in the general vicinity after spending Saturday night in College Station, where all five living former presidents united to raise money for hurricane efforts. And Jordan Spieth not only lives in Dallas, but is a Dallas National member. So also living here is Mavericks guards and brother Seth Curry. So, and Steph Warriors had arrived in town early for Monday night's game against the Mavericks. So do this. Steph Curry, Jordan Spieth playing there. Of course, Steph Curry and Spieth are high-profile Under Armour pitchmen, which explain why the group was joined by Under Armour CEO Kevin Plank, with Jerry West's son, Johnny, rounding out the sixum. So Steph Curry said that he tried to take on the three-time major champion Spieth, although presumably Spieth gave Curry a few shots per side. Spieth and Curry met on the American Airlines Arena 2 years ago. So, but this was their first round of golf together. The first previous two times that Steph has played with Obama came while he was still in the office. And he said, well, I mean, we are now 2-1, so we have a better record than the Golden State Warriors. I guess that he was 2-0, and this one was his first loss. So at least Fred Barack Obama seems to be playing golf as long as he can. I mean, as any chance that he has. And Trump, again, is playing now, is going to be playing with Shinzo Abe and Hideki Matsuyama there in Japan.
Nice to see the presidents and the former presidents are getting in a few hacks. It's always good. I like that. Hey, during the Asia-Pacific Amateur Championship last week at Royal Wellington Golf Club in New Zealand, Frank Nabilo was inducted into the New Zealand Hall of Fame. Nabilo competed in 27 major championships and is the only New Zealander to finish in the top 10 of all four. Nabilo said, "It's a true honor to be inducted, and this means a lot to me and my family." He played in 3 President's Cups, twice as an assistant captain, and represented New Zealand in 11 Dunhill Cups and 12 World Cups before he was forced to retire early in 2004 with ongoing back problems. Of course, Nabilo is more recognized these days as an announcer for CBS and the Golf Channel. Brooks Koepka's caddy won the Caddy of the Year award on the PGA Tour. At the WGC HSBC last week, Ricky Elliott, who caddies for Brooks Koepka, was awarded Caddy of the Year. Elliott, who hails from Port Rush in Ireland, has spent the last 4 years working with Koepka. They met when Koepka was on the European Challenge Tour and is now the U.S. Open champion as well as the number 7 ranked player in the world. Elliott was awarded a much-coveted white bib, which is the equivalent of a green jacket for caddies. Carlos, that wraps up everything I have. Don't forget to visit OhioGolfJournal.com. Check out Back Nine Report TV on Roku.
Well, Back Niners, that wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Special thanks to our VIG very important guest of the week, Bill Cuevas, the golf father. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Blog Talk Radio. Or if you missed it, check it out on iTunes or TuneIn. And like Fred said, also you can see on Roku TV. If you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is @Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Has this ever happened to you? You put some money in a savings account with a great rate. But that promotional savings rate came crashing down. You deserve better. Take just 5 minutes and open a Capital One savings account online. You'll get one of the nation's best rates that's not a promotional rate. Welcome to Banking Reimagined. What's in your wallet?
For consumers only. Offered by Capital One N.A. member FDIC. Copyright 2017 Capital One.